You're listening to a stage talk titled Chinese Influence Operations and Disinformation Campaigns. This week, we were joined by DoubleThink Lab's Jasper Hewitt as we explored the new forms of propaganda. We discussed spamouflage operations in the US elections to AI influencers pushing state lines on TikTok, along with some tool and reading recommendations along the way. This talk was hosted by me, Charlotte Ma, on Thursday, the 8th of May, 2025, in the Bellingcat Discord server.
Well, hello all and welcome back for another stage talk. This week, we're speaking about digital influence operations and disinformation campaigns. An MIT study back in 2018, which feels like forever ago, found that fake news was 70% more likely to be retweeted on Twitter than real news. And that was before Musk's takeover. So you can imagine what that looks like now. While state-led influence operations have happened for years, but the use of internet, and in particular social media, as a means of running information operations has grown prominently over the past decade. The Chinese Communist Party is one such political power that uses digital influence operations and disinformation campaigns to advance the party's interests in the region and further afield. Jasper Hewitt joins us here from DoubleThink Lab. DoubleThink Lab researches malign Chinese influence operations and disinformation campaigns and their impacts via the digital tools and methodologies they have developed. As an analyst, Jasper's focus has been on PRC influence operations during the Taiwanese and US elections, and he's currently investigating how official PRC accounts use the Meta Ad Library to expand their content's reach. We'll jump into all of that in a second, but first, a short reminder. If you'd like to ask a question, please do so in the chat as we talk. And please note within your question, if you do not want me to read your username out, as this is being audio recorded and will appear on podcast platforms. Okay, Jasper, before questions, can you tell us a little bit more about your work? And while you do so, I will mute.
Yes. So first of all, thank you for that great introduction. And thanks for having us, having DoubleThink Lab here. This is a great opportunity to talk to the whole community. So yeah, as you just said, DoubleThink Lab is a Taiwanese organization. We're an NGO and we've been founded in 2019. And yeah, we mostly conduct research into PRC influence operations. Now I'm on the digital intelligence team, so I'm mainly responsible for tracking and reporting on all of the inauthentic accounts. And we're also developing automated tools to track these accounts because, of course, this is a very time-consuming work. So if we can automate it, then we do that wherever possible. But I can talk about that more in the Q&A. So yeah, today I just want to give you first say a few things about FIMI or influence operations and how that's different from fake news and disinformation. And then I just want to give you a crash course into PRC influence operations. So we're going to talk about spamouflage, which is the biggest one. And I'm going to tell you about how spamouflage has been evolving over the last few years. So yeah, FIMI. So FIMI stands for Foreign Information Manipulation and Interference. It's a very long name, but it's basically a different term for foreign influence operation. Now, the key term there is foreign. So we're mostly concerned with information that goes from one country to another and then tries to influence the political debate in that second country. So FIMI is different from fake news and disinformation because not all influence operations are disinformation. So people can say something that is true, right? You can just say like, oh, I really like that political candidate. And that's not necessarily fake news. But we care mostly about the method that something, how information is spread. So we're looking for coordinated inauthentic behavior. So it's methods over content. So if we find that there's like 1,000 inauthentic accounts saying, for example, that BYD is an amazing company, then that would be a reason for us to investigate. Now, if we look at PRC influence operations, there's several actors that are involved in this. So obviously there's the PRC state media, right? This is really big and they're all very active on social media on several platforms. And then there's influencers. Now, some of these influencers have direct ties to the PRC government. With some influencers, it's not as clear if they have ties to the PRC government, but people suspect that they do. And then there's spamouflage. So that's tens of thousands of, if not more, fake accounts that are basically just spamming the internet with pro-PRC messages. So yeah, spamouflage has been defined as a massive cross-platform propaganda infrastructure. It was first discovered by Graphica in 2019. So Ben Nimmo actually gave it the name spamouflage because they would camouflage their propaganda with spam. So yeah, you wouldn't only see propaganda. It would be like pictures of beautiful scenery or pictures of attractive individuals or random book quotes. And then suddenly there would be this this PRC propaganda. Now, in 2023, Meta actually attributed spamouflage to PRC law enforcement. So this was a very important finding, but it basically proved what everybody was already thinking, right? Because all of this stuff was so pro-PRC that there could really be only be one entity behind it. Now, what is spamouflage saying? Because this has also changed over time. At the beginning, they were mostly concerned with issues that are sensitive to the PRC. So, for example, prominent dissident Guo Wengui, he was targeted at the start, and then Hong Kong with the protests, COVID, and then also Xinjiang and Tibet. But over time, the campaign just became more overall pro-PRC, anti-West. They started going after specific countries. So the USA is obviously a big target. Taiwan is a very big target. I think we're right at the forefront here in Taiwan. And then Japan, the Philippines, right? Maritime disputes. These are all topics that spamouflage is touching on. So, for example, during the U.S. elections, these accounts were also very active, and they were basically criticizing domestic issues, but also U.S. foreign policy, like, for example, U.S. support for Israel, for Ukraine. And they were critical of both presidential candidates. They're also going after individuals, so specific dissidents, also smaller dissidents, not just the super high profile ones. They're all being targeted by this campaign. So their social media accounts, sometimes in the comment sections, you'll read a lot of hate comments, and those are also attributed to spamouflage. Now, what do these accounts look like? So I'm going to talk a little bit about how they operate, and then you can maybe also use some of that info to find these accounts yourself if you're interested in it. So many of these accounts, they would use profile photos of women, mostly Asian women. And many of these photos have been taken from small, like, Chinese influencers. So I personally think this is really messed up, because these people, technically speaking, cannot use Western platforms themselves. But then an influence operation attributed to their government is taking their photos to put them out there on these Western platforms. The accounts mostly kind of like swarm around the larger state media accounts and also influencers. So if you look at some state media accounts or accounts from diplomats, for example, Zhang Heqing is a big one. He used to be the diplomat to Pakistan, and now he's a big personality on X. And if you go through his posts and you look at his retweets, most of it will be, you will see, is spamouflage. Now, these accounts usually have a division of labor. So there's like seeders, and then there's amplifiers. So seeders would post the initial content, and then there's like 20 amplifiers below that their only job is just to repost that. We think that the accounts are cyborg accounts, so to say. So they're like partly operated by scripts, but they're also definitely real people behind it. So we know that there's real people behind it because they are actually most active during PRC working hours. So if you plot their activity, you will see that's like from 9 to 5 in PRC working time. And then they also have a lunch break between like 12 and 2. So you can actually see that activity drop. So sometimes they'll also make robotic posts. So, for example, sometimes at the beginning, there's robotic book quotes when the accounts just start. And those also happen outside of working hours, because obviously when you run a script, there's no need to be in the office. Now, if you think of a fake account, then many people might think of an account that, you know, was just created the other day and has very little followers or something, but we actually found that many of the, specifically the Cedar accounts, they were created like back in 2012, 2011, and they have huge followings. So we found some accounts that have more than 70,000 followers, 50,000 followers. And it's not that the PRC was very early with making all of these accounts. We found that actually many of them have been hacked. So those were inactive accounts that haven't been used for a very long time. And then they got hacked, and then they probably got sold to the people running Spamouflage. So one funny example with an account that we were tracking during the US election is when we finally get to get all of their posts through the API, we found that back in 2011, this account belonged to a radio show in Texas. And then after that, it was just inactive for like 12 years. And then suddenly it became a Spamouflage account. We also found that these accounts appear to buy third-party like retweet amplification, especially on X. So during our investigation, we found over 1,000 accounts that artificially boost these Spamouflage posts. And these accounts were actually crypto accounts and Web3 accounts that normally speaking have a lot of, normally speaking, all of their reposts are of like large crypto accounts like ChainGPT or London Real TV. So it was really interesting to see that in those timelines, suddenly you would see these Spamouflage posts popping up. So there's some interesting dynamics going on there. It's not like they do everything in-house. There's definitely some collaboration going on with spam companies, potentially also from other countries. Now, Spamouflage is notoriously ineffective. So many researchers say that Spamouflage has failed to get a lot of authentic interaction over time. So what I just said, they buy their retweets. Many of their followers and their retweets are other Spamouflage accounts. So yeah, should we really be caring about this? Well, today I'm here to say that yes, I think we should keep caring about Spamouflage because it is evolving. And they are definitely trying to find new ways to become more relevant. So I'm now going to share two or three examples of what we found in which we can see that Spamouflage is becoming more relevant, I think. So during the US elections, they were continuing what they were always doing, like posting a lot of pro-PRC stuff and saying some critical things about the United States. But we also saw something new, and this was called Megaflage. So there were these Spamouflage accounts that were impersonating Trump supporters. And this was first discovered by Elise Thomas at the Institute for Strategic Dialogue. And there were these accounts that really pretended to be Americans. So they had like in their bio, they had like all these American flags and said like stuff like hashtag NRA and stuff like that. They were interesting because it was harder to prove that they were connected to Spamouflage. So whereas normally speaking, Spamouflage is very straightforward. They just post a lot of pro PRC stuff. So it's very easy to kind of see where their allegiance lies. But then with these accounts, they didn't post any pro PRC stuff. They just posted pro Trump stuff, which was really weird. So we were tracking a bunch of these accounts, and we already had like the idea that maybe these accounts were connected to the campaign, because there were some of the crypto accounts were also amplifying these accounts. And then their posting times were also in PRC working times, even though they all claimed to be Americans, which is like weird because that would be the middle of the night in the United States. And then at some point they made this, so Spamouflage is very clumsy. They sometimes make very clumsy mistakes. And then at some point, like 7 out of the 15 accounts that we were tracking, they suddenly posted this, this account in Chinese criticizing the Falun Gong, which was just completely out of context of what they were doing before. And I think after that, they kind of realized that the batch was compromised. They just left those accounts and they haven't been used since. So these accounts are still online. If you go through our US election report, then you can find the account name. Now, another thing, one specifically interesting account goes by the name of Edward D. Mayer. It's also still going today, even though we've reported on it many times. This account became really relevant. I think it's been the most successful Spamouflage account that we've been tracking over the last few months. So this account actually gamed the whole X algorithm by posting street fight videos. So instead of boring spam, like some scenery, this account found that if he posts street fight videos, then the algorithm just boosts his posts. So he got some street fight videos for which he got like 9 million views. And this kind of spilled over to some of the propaganda posts that he would make. So on some of the propaganda posts, he would get like 100,000 views. Now, this is weak, very weak spillover, but still a very big difference from what Spamouflage usually gets in terms of interaction. So with the other Spamouflage accounts, we maybe look at like 10,000 views, 15,000 views on a good day, and then 20,000 views would be like the jackpot, at least for what we checked. But this account really managed to game the algorithm and found a very interesting way to become more relevant. And at some point, this account got like a warning label to its account from X, saying that it was posting violent content, and that influenced how it got recommended by the algorithm. So after that, the account became irrelevant again. But he still continued. Like, he created a few new accounts that I think were done by the same operator. And he also created like an X community, which was also interesting to see. So they're trying out all these new functions. And this account was also actively replying to authentic users with large following. So he was just like talking to some people and saying stuff about immigration. And then people would actually respond to it and go into dialogue with it. So this was a very interesting finding. And it shows that Spamouflage, they don't sit still and stay irrelevant. They really look for ways to become more relevant. Now, another thing that they've been doing is experimenting with artificial intelligence, of course. So I'm happy to talk more about that in the Q&A, because this is it's a big topic. Another thing that they've been doing is experimenting with new platforms. So there's a lot of new platforms popping up, right? Blue Sky, Threads. And especially Threads is huge in Taiwan. I think for now, for young people, Threads is probably the most important platform in Taiwan. And Taiwan is going through some political challenges right now. There have been a lot of influence operations from Spamouflage targeted at Taiwan, specifically at the ruling party right now. So in this case, we also see like a similar pattern. So also the Spamouflage pattern, like spam and then propaganda, but it's more like the MAGAflage. It's not overly pro PRC because they know that most Taiwanese people don't necessarily associate with that. So it's more toned down. It's more like with the MAGAflage, like they're only posting specific political messages that they think people might associate themselves with. And some of these posts actually already reached more than 80,000 views and 9,000 likes on like the political posts. So this is very, very high compared to what we saw on X. This might also be related because the Threads algorithm just works differently. On Blue Sky, we've also seen a few Spamouflage accounts popping up. And Blue Sky is particularly interesting because it has a really good open API. I don't know if anyone played around with it yet. But Blue Sky is just the ultimate platform to like create an army of bots and just let it run. So yeah, but nobody is really using it yet, or not enough people are using it yet. So if everybody switches to Blue Sky tomorrow, that would be very interesting. And also, it's also a lot easier to do analysis on Blue Sky, because the biggest challenge, I think, in this work has been that all of the platforms are closing down their access to researchers. So CrowdTangle disappeared, right? Got replaced by the content library, but it's not the same. And the X API is, yeah, basically completely closed off, right? You have to pay a lot of money. I think if you want to get a million tweets per month now, you need to pay 5,000 USD a month. And in the past, a researcher could get 2 million tweets per month for free. And TikTok is also a challenge in itself, because the video format is just kind of a pain in the ass to find information, especially because their search function is very incomplete. If you just type, like, if you do a keyword search, then it just gives you like 10 random videos or 20 random videos from random years that it thinks you might be most interested in. So it's very difficult to do like exhaustive research there. So yeah, I think that's it for me. And we can go to the Q&A.
Amazing. Thank you. Yeah, I think most people within this audience, or at least in the Bellingcat staff side, have experienced that frustration with the tools closing down to monitor social media sites. Before going to audience questions, I was intrigued actually to ask you what the differences are, particularly as we've got such a research-based audience. What's unique about researching Chinese disinformation campaigns in comparison, for example, with US state-led disinfo or Russian state-led disinfo campaigns? Are there any unique obstacles or anything that researchers who are used to looking at, for example, Russian propaganda might be surprised to encounter when it comes to Chinese propaganda?
Yeah, I have to be really honest in that I don't know enough necessarily about the Russian disinfo campaigns. This is something that I know that I should get more into, but I keep postponing it. I think the language element, the language aspect, is very unique, maybe to the Chinese influence operations ones. Like in the beginning, many of these accounts would like post a lot in Chinese, but then now they're slowly using more English. Also, that now there's AI, so you can it's more easy to just translate posts, so there's less language mistakes. But if you're looking at influence operations from the PRC towards Taiwan, which is interesting because they both technically use the same language, right? But then there's a difference in the characters that Taiwan and China use. So Taiwan uses the traditional characters and China uses simplified characters. And what we often look for in posts that we think might come from the PRC is we're looking for mistakes in the conversion between those characters. So many PRC threat actors, they will write a post in simplified and then they'll throw it through software to convert it to traditional characters. And then there's always mistakes there. So yeah, we're kind of like always looking for these simplified characters that might give us a hint.
Yeah, absolutely. You can often find, for example, with Russian disinfo campaigns as well, language, even in translated English, can help you spot if something is potentially misleading or not, because often the language translation isn't incredible. And as you mentioned, is often based on kind of translation bots online. We've got quite a few questions coming through. We've had a few, because you mentioned about the nature of social media as well. Sia Skippy asked, has X's moderation of disinformation varied with the nation of origin and content of the disinformation? As in, do different countries get different and different governments get different treatment? And kind of mentioned with that, Uscom said, you've mentioned that you've tried to get these accounts banned with little effect. What other mitigation opportunities do you see? So when you're looking at social media, does moderation change depending on where these disinformation campaigns come from? And what other mitigation opportunities do you see when banning these individual accounts doesn't work?
Okay, so I'm not sure if there's a difference in terms of geography, like if you do it in this country or if you do it in another country. What I did notice is there's a difference in time. So if we find an account now and we write on it, I really highly doubt whether X will ever delete it. But when we were doing this research during the US elections, like in the weeks leading up to the actual election, and we had a collaboration with Voice of America. So Voice of America was just churning out articles about this all the time. And back then we did notice that a lot of accounts that they reported on actually got deleted, like in the days after the article broke. So, and in some cases where we really found that someone was being impersonated, for example, and then an ex spokesperson actually came out to say something about this and said that they deleted that specific account. So I guess at that point, even X itself realized that they had to do something because otherwise there might be too much pressure on them that they're not doing anything. And there's other accounts, like, for example, the pay for repost accounts that I mentioned, like the crypto accounts, they were banned very, very rapidly. But I think that's just like an anti-spam campaign that they always have running. And it's not necessarily related to disinformation. But like those thousands of accounts that we found back then, I think all of them have been deleted today. So in terms of other methods for mitigation, like if the platform doesn't want to take it down, I don't really see another thing that you can do. Maybe like if a lot of people report it, maybe at some point they will do it. But I also am very skeptical about that. So I think the best thing you can do is to just tell other people about it so that everybody knows that this kind of this badge exists and that people are aware that these kind of accounts belong to an influence operation. And that's especially relevant right now for Taiwan, where so many people are on Threads. And right now there's so many disinformation going on Threads, and normal people are seeing it in their daily lives and are talking about it at work. So I think just calling it out and calling out that this exists can sometimes already be enough.
Absolutely. We have seen a pattern personally, though, at Bellingcat, for example, and I know a couple of other news organizations have as well, is when it comes to news impersonation, when there's tactics where they're impersonating news organizations, for example, calling it out has actually given these individual accounts more viewership and more engagement. So then they've been using that as a tactic, and we've seen an uptake in, for example, in terms of the Russian disinformation context, people, Russian disinfo drivers emailing and trying to get the attention of European fact checkers, for example, so that they can fact check the content to then drive more engagement their way. Interesting model, but has been working for them and is something that we've spoken about in a stage talk before. We've got so many questions rolling in. I'm hoping I can keep up with them all. Just keeping on the social media side, and as you were talking about the spamouflage, particularly within the election that you spoke about, Skippy asked earlier as well, how many of those followers of these accounts are themselves legitimate or bots? For example, my experience on Twitter is that accounts just naturally accrue totally authentic followers at a steady rate. Is there kind of a secondary group of bots that are being created to amplify those particular tweets or those particular posts? Is that part of the plan? Or are these real people kind of getting suckered in to kind of the propaganda and the messaging?
So this is a very important question. And I don't know if you're familiar with the breakout skill. So this was also developed by Ben Nimmo. So the breakout skill, basically, when you look at like disinformation or influence operations, you want to see like, did this post break out of its initial bubble? And the initial bubble is just an inauthentic bubble with just a bunch of fake accounts that are following each other and are liking each other. And then if it breaks out of that bubble, you would be like in category two. And if it breaks out on multiple platforms, you'd be in category three. And then it keeps going up. So we're always trying to look for if these accounts are getting authentic interactions from like real accounts. And it's difficult to look at all the followers. It's possible, but like if you have these large accounts that I mentioned earlier, like these hijacked accounts, those are tens of thousands of followers. I think it might be somewhat of a waste of time to go through all of their followers. So what we usually do is we look at the comment section, because the comment section of spamouflage accounts are very, let's say, most of the other spamouflage accounts that comment on these posts, they all agree. They all say stuff like, yes, good point. Stuff like that. It's very kind of like monotone. But if at some point you see replies that like disagree with the post, or you maybe see replies with people saying stuff like, oh, this is weird or whatever for some reason, then you can assume that this post has somehow reached authentic users. So I think that's the easiest way to see that. Yeah. And then, just a little more on that. So I think they themselves, Spamouflage itself, is creating more and more Spamouflage accounts to then follow all of these accounts and also repost them. And then on the other hand, I think they're also buying it from third party. So like spam companies, they're also buying like likes and reposts.
You mentioned that in terms of the propaganda aimed at Taiwanese population, that's happening a lot on Threads. We've actually had a question from Sohan D'Souza, who's asked, would you please advise regarding optimal techniques for Threads investigations? The advanced search doesn't seem too bad, but transparency, even via external services, seems lacking. Could you speak a little bit about how the difficulties and the ease of investigating, particularly on Threads, as that's a new platform that many of the researchers, for example, in the audience may be new to and want advice on?
Yeah, sure. So I think one thing that's difficult about Threads is that everything is new. So sometimes when people look for fake accounts on X, because in most cases, it still are like new accounts, right? So you would suddenly see an account that was created like 3 months ago saying all this stuff. But then like on Threads, it's not weird to have an account that was created 3 months ago because everybody is just joining this year. But yeah, I think Threads is available in the content library now if you have access to that, but it has a lot of limitations, like only certain accounts you will see. So it's not very helpful. So what I think is a very useful tool is there's this add-on that you can get in the Chrome store. It's called Single File. And it basically just lets you get like an .html file of the whole page that is currently loaded. So you can just go to someone's timeline and you can scroll all the way down and you can click the add-on, and then it will just download a .html file of that whole page. So that would include like all the posts, all the images. And what you can also do after that is you can write a script to organize that data into a data frame. So technically speaking, you're not scraping, right? You're not using Selenium and stuff. So Facebook won't detect you and ban your account because, yeah, you're just using this tool to get all of the HTML, and then you can do with that data what you want after. Another thing that's difficult on Threads is I found that sometimes certain things aren't really working. Like when I try to click the account creation date, for example, on my laptop, sometimes I get a lot of errors. But then when I do it on my phone, it works. So I feel like the app works better on your phone than it works on your computer. But I'm not doing investigations on my phone. And then, yeah, you also have to do a lot of clicks to get there. So it just takes a lot of time. Other than that, I think I like that it has a keyword search function with a recent tab. So I think it looks pretty exhaustive, like what you have on Twitter. So I'm really happy about that, that it's not like TikTok.
Thanks for that little tip. I've linked that in the chat, and I've personally just gone and downloaded it. I have a similar one called Go Full Page, but that's just takes a PNG. So it's good to know that there's one for HTML.
Yeah, to say more on that, this works for like almost every website. The only downside is that the .html files are very big. So if you get like someone's full timeline, you might get like 100 MB. But yeah, I think it's kind of like a half manual, half automated way for data collection. It's also a great way to archive, right? We all know the trouble of trying to archive something with your VPN on, and then you have to, it just takes ages. But with this thing, you can just click it and save it for later. And then if the account gets deleted, you can just go back to the .html and make your screenshots from there.
And that's a great time for me just to shout that we have a Bellingcat auto archiver, which has recently had some updates done to it. So please do check that out as well. Just linked the guide to that in the chat. We've had quite a few questions, and I'll actually take Golem Chalk, cool name, most recent question to kind of encompass this. But we've had quite a few questions about how you spot Chinese FIMI or Spamouflage accounts when their activity seems to be non-discernible from others, other FIMI without an in-depth analysis. Are there any like telltale signs to spot kind of Spamouflage accounts? specifically Chinese camouflage counts?
Yes. So I think so. Some of the things that I just mentioned, like for example, that they're mostly active during PRC working hours. That is one that you can always check. And you can also look at the content. So for example, I mentioned a few things like specific dissidents or Hong Kong or Xinjiang. So these are like target topics that they always focus on. So if it's like a traditional spamouflage account, it will talk about these topics and it's very easy to spot. So you can just go to, for example, you can go to the People's Daily's X account and then just go through its repost or look in the comment section and you'll find a bunch of spamouflage accounts. Now it becomes more tricky if the spamouflage accounts are like these megaflage type of accounts, right? So they're not posting all of this traditional pro PRC stuff. And you might think like, oh, this could be anyone running this influence operation. So how we attributed those accounts to spamouflage is by looking at the people who amplify it. So that's where these kind of weird crypto accounts came in. So we noticed that these accounts were amplifying a lot of spamouflage. And then suddenly, like right before the election, like 5 days before the election, just all these new accounts were created that criticized specific lawmakers. And they only had three posts and nothing else. But when we looked at the reposters, we saw that there's actually quite some overlap with the accounts that amplify the traditional spamouflage and also PRC state media accounts. So that's how we were able to attribute it. There's also more on that in our US election observation report, if you're interested. And I highly recommend anyone to just read a lot of papers about spamouflage, and you will find, you will see a lot of account characteristics that you can use to find them. And once you find a few, you can just keep snowballing.
Someone asked earlier, actually, in the chat, whether in the election coverage that you saw, were they only promoting kind of Trump rhetoric, or was it on other, was it a little bit more broader across the political spectrum? They also asked, have you seen any similar campaigns targeting European politicians, for example, as, for example, last year was a huge election year across the world. Have you seen any similar trends in terms of European elections?
So first on the first question, most of the traditional spamouflage accounts were like anti everything. They did say a few things that maybe align more with Trump. So they were, for example, a bit more, they're anti US support for Ukraine, which maybe you think that, okay, maybe that's more closely connected to what Trump is saying. They were also critical of the LGBTQ movement. So maybe you can also draw some connections there. But with the megaflage accounts specifically, the accounts that are really pushing Trump, we only found that for Trump. We didn't find similar accounts that were supporting Biden. One interesting thing, though, is that basically all of the spamouflage accounts that we were tracking were very anti-LGBTQ. And then, like those 5 days before the election, when these accounts were created that criticized specific lawmakers, they were criticizing Republican lawmakers for being anti-LGBTQ. So that's just a completely different standpoint, kind of playing both sides. So it was interesting to see that. And for Europe, I haven't really been tracking the European election season, and also the accounts that I was tracking, it was more quiet about the European elections, but I'm pretty sure that some stuff did go on. Yeah.
Maybe that's something our community can have a look into, something to track, guys, a little homework for you all. You mentioned earlier that often they use images of influencers as part of the accounts. They might not be aware, these influencers might not be aware that their images are being used, or it's being used without their consent or their control. Do you also see a trend of proxy actors or self-interested actors helping to boost propaganda narratives in Asia particularly? For example, social media influencers peddling Chinese state lands. I think on your website, it might be termed economic capital owners or suitors. Is there any pattern to there to what these influencers look like, say, or do they kind of transcend algorithmic communities if they do exist?
So one of our partners actually wrote a big article on that. That's also on our Medium, and she found that on WeChat. So now you have these WeChat stories, and she found that there were a lot of influencers. So Chinese and also Taiwanese influencers, like living in Taiwan, who would then post a lot of very pro PRC narratives. So to say, like, oh, Taiwan should join China and that kind of stuff. But the conclusion there was that she believed that they were only saying these things because they know that they might be boosted by the algorithm for saying that. And then they were all like running these online shops on the side. And this is interesting because we found a similar thing on TikTok. I think Voice of America also wrote an article about that, where we found these accounts that were kind of like operated, seen from out of Singapore, and they were AI avatars, often of Western looking women or Russian or Ukrainian women. I think that's how it kind of started. And they would start by giving this pro PRC propaganda talk, and then like halfway through the video, they would suddenly start promoting these vitamin products, and it's just so weird. But there's this theory that these videos were maybe originally made for PRC social media, and they think like, oh, if we post this kind of stuff, the narrative, the algorithm will push us because that's what that's what Xi Jinping wants us to say. So then, and then we use that to then sell our products. But this is still kind of like a hypothesis, but we did find this in multiple different places.
That's really interesting. I haven't seen it linked with political comment, but I've definitely seen news influencers, fake ones, using a news hub to then go and sell a well-being product, for example. It's really interesting that that's a tactic that they might be using, particularly on TikTok. Thanks for sharing. And I've linked, I think, was it called Patriotism for Sale, the WeChat one?
Yes, yeah, that's the one.
I've linked that within the chat. Do check out DoubleThink Labs Medium, by the way. It's full of incredible information. Hanya Reyes just put, I've seen hacked influencer accounts start to sell products on TikTok too. Mashdar said maybe they modeled some of it off Alex Jones' InfoWars as they were pushing vitamins. Somebody's just dropped your DoubleThink Lab Medium in the chat as well. That's really cool. Thank you for doing that. Still so many questions coming in. You mentioned the big term AI in your last answer. Could you tell us a little bit more about how AI is being used in influence operations going forwards? And is that a new phenomenon or has it been going on for a few years?
I think right now the thing that AI, that people are most afraid of with AI are not really happening yet, at least with PRC influence operations. It feels like they are kind of experimenting with it. So I kind of divided up for myself. I think AI is being used in four different ways. Now, the first one is AI that is being used to deceive, right? So you're trying to create photos or videos that look real, but actually they're fake. And you're really trying to, you're really trying to fool people and change their perception of things through these fake videos or photos. And so far from the PRC influence operations, I have not really seen that. Most of the use of AI has been AI to convey a certain idea. So they would, for example, create an AI-generated image of, like Trump and Netanyahu kissing or something like that. And that would be like, everybody knows that this is fake, right? It's very obvious, but it's being used to kind of to get this idea out there, get this visualization. I guess it's just a replacement for a cartoon if you don't have time to draw a cartoon yourself. And then there is another method, which is also interesting, and that's AI as a technical assistant. So, for example, we found Also in the US election, we found that some accounts, like a few days before the election, they suddenly uploaded a video and it was like a speech in English and then some stock images in the back. But we actually found that the speech originates from a Baidu post in Chinese, like an essay that someone posted. And we highly suspect that they used AI to translate and then also used text-to-speech AI to create the voice to say this. So this opens up a lot of possibilities, right? So they can now just get any data from the Chinese cyberspace and just turn it into a spoken, like perfectly spoken English audio fragment and just put it on Western social media. There was something similar in Taiwan during the election. So someone made a PRC threat actor wrote this book about Tsai Ing-wen, the previous president, and they called it The Secret History of Tsai Ing-wen, which was just a book full of nonsense about Tsai Ing-wen. And then they got all of these AI avatars that they got made with CapCut. So I think that belongs to ByteDance. And they made all these AI avatars to narrate the book in kind of like a newsroom setting. So yeah, just kind of using these AI tools to very quickly get certain information out there. And I think the most scary one, which is like AI for full automation, which is the thing that I am most afraid of, we've seen accounts experimenting with it. Like we've seen posts, even posts by, for example, Zhang Heqing, like the former PRC diplomat. He has a lot of posts that look a lot like they were AI generated. And I think that that's where it becomes really scary, because that's the moment where you can just create 10,000 bots and give them like a wide range of prompts. You can give them guidelines and they just can create original content all the time. And it just won't stop. And especially because OpenAI, like in February, they released their newest report in which they found that PRC threat actors were using ChatGPT to create critical comments of certain dissidents. So yeah, then you can just unleash an army of like 10,000 bots on one person, especially if you have like a model that you can locally run. So this is what I'm most afraid of, but it hasn't really happened yet.
Thanks so much for explaining some of the tactics that they take in terms of AI. In regards to other questions, Minnie Joyce has asked, what are the odds China uses cyber capabilities to bolster their FIMI operations? I mean, more than they already do. Is there a sense where they're using cyber capabilities to bolster kind of the reach of these kinds of operations?
I think that is definitely possible at some point, especially if you start looking at full automation that I was just talking about. I think at that point they could definitely tap into some of the cyber resources that they have. But I also think that you would maybe see this on like, you know, like creating news websites and stuff like that. I think you would see it. It would be more prominent there than like on social media accounts. And yeah, of course they have. You have the rise of PRC platforms right now. So yeah, TikTok and also Xiaohongshu, like Red Note. People have also started downloading that. And of course, there's also a lot of, I think, embedded influence operation going on within these apps, with pushing certain content and suppressing other content in the same way that it happens on Weibo or like the really proper PRC platforms. So they're definitely using their cyber capabilities there.
Asterix asked earlier, and this goes back to kind of people in the audience, for example, who might be interested in getting involved in all of this. What research, what resources / learning platforms / certifications would you recommend for someone trying to get into the field of FIMI?
I think the field of FIMI is kind of, it's maybe similar to OSINT in general, but the field of FIMI, most of the analysts, especially at Double Think Lab, all come from kind of like a political science background. I also have like a background in Chinese studies and Asia Pacific studies. And then I learned some coding and some data science, but we also have an engineering team that can really help us with more of the technical things. But I think just some basic Python, like especially pandas, could be very useful because, for example, when we write algorithms to detect coordinated inauthentic behavior, we look a lot at, for example, post similarity, and the time between posts is also very important. So if you can very quickly kind of like manipulate the data to find similar posts using certain Python packages, and also find posts, batch posts that were done in very rapid succession, then that is definitely very helpful. I guess if you're very good with Excel, you can also do all of that stuff. I don't necessarily think you need any certification or like specific certification. At least I don't really have that. But I do recommend that you just read as much research as possible from, for example, DoubleThink Lab or DFR Lab or Microsoft Threat Intelligence, right? You also have Google is also doing research in all of this. There's so many parties out there that have researched Spamouflage before. And yeah, you can kind of imitate or copy their research methods.
And as a reminder, you can always ask for support and help within this survey as well. We have lots of channels for that, which I'm sure the mods can point you to, particularly when it comes to covering China specifically. We have region specific channels as well, where you can debate and talk about the current news and current investigations. We've also had a recommendation by somebody to check out Sam Cooper's work regarding Chinese interference, as a Canadian journalist who's uncovered quite a bit about Chinese influence and interference in Canada specifically. Do you, Jasper, do you have any other recommendations for investigative journalists, perhaps, that our team, our audience could look at?
I'm sorry, what do you mean precisely?
In regards to journalists within the space as well, as you mentioned, the organizations that are working within the space, are there any journalists that also stand out to you that are working within this space and highlighting Chinese influence operations?
I've worked very closely together with Wenhao Ma from VOA. He has a Substack, and I'm sure he will land a nice job again soon, and he will keep reporting on it. But I think his China reporting has been really good, and he very often also touches on issues related to influence operations. So I definitely recommend following him. And then there is some other, it's not really journalists, but it's more like researchers also. So it's called Discourse Power. It's also this Substack. And they also write a lot of excellent stuff about that, also touches a lot on PRC influence operations, but also PRC propaganda in general.
Amazing. Getting so many reading recommendations right now. Thank you. I've put both of those within the chat. We only have 5 minutes left, so I just want to make sure that we've covered everyone's questions. We had a question earlier, particularly about the influence of Chinese operations or digital operations in Africa. Are you familiar with any large-scale influence campaigns by the PRC, for example, on the African continent? And does that differ to their attempts, for example, in Taiwan or in America?
So far, I haven't really been tracking a lot of Africa-focused focused influence operations yet. I'm sure that they do exist, but in the account pool that we've been tracking over the last few months, Africa rarely popped up. I would say that countries like the Philippines and Japan are a bigger topic. Also now, obviously, India and Pakistan, that's a very hot topic right now for these accounts. Yeah.
Yeah, someone's put, as an African, we start to see a lot of Chinese projects here, mostly infra. Fabulous. Great. Well, thank you so much, Jesper, for your time today. I wanted to just wrap up with a final question, if that's okay. What tools are absolutely vital to your deep dive research in general? You mentioned a couple for threads earlier, but which ones are absolutely vital to the research that you do? We like to leave people with some kind of key resources to look into. But other than that, thank you very much for joining. And yeah, thank you everybody for listening. But yeah, if you can just throw some tools our way, and then we'll wrap up.
My single most important tool is single file. If you don't have access to official APIs or you don't have access to any scrapers, you can use single file. And if you have a little bit of Python or a ChatGPT account, then you can figure it out, and you can basically get any data and put it into a neat data format and then analyze it. So yeah, definitely just single file.
Amazing. I think we're going to have to start a little Python learning group within Bellingcat. I know quite a few people know it, but I think we should start a little one up in the Discord server and work together on that. Thanks so much for sharing single file as a resource for us. And yeah, thanks again for joining us on this particular talk. It's been super fascinating. And yeah, hope to see you back in the Discord server again soon. Thanks so much, Jesper.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Stage Talk. If you'd like to catch a Stage Talk live where you can ask the guest questions, join the Bellingcat Discord server by visiting www.discord.gg/Bellingcat. The music you've heard is titled Dawn by Newer Self and is courtesy of Artlist.